I'm Dr. Edward Jauch, an emergency physician at the University of Cincinnati, a member of the Greater Cincinnati Northern Kentucky Stroke Team, and a member of the writing committee for the 2007 Guidelines for the Early Management of Adults with Ischemic Stroke. The American Heart Association has begun to reorganize the development and release of their stroke guidelines. The guideline development process has been standardized with increasing oversight and the review and update of guidelines now on a fixed schedule of reissue every 3 years to ensure timeliness. Three recent guidelines have been developed and released which impact emergency physicians. These recordings will quickly review and highlight the sections of the guidelines which most affect the practice of emergency medicine. The American Heart Association has reissued their update, Guidelines for the Early Management of Adults with Ischemic Stroke. This is the first update since the previous release in 2001. These guidelines have been developed by a panel of physicians with a broad range of expertise, including vascular neurology, neurocritical care, emergency medicine, neurosurgery, and interventional neuroradiology. The intended audience for these guidelines includes physicians, EMS personnel, and other medical personnel who deal with the emergency diagnosis and treatment of patients with suspected ischemic stroke. The goal of these guidelines is to provide updated recommendations that may be used by these physicians who provide acute stroke care within the first hours to time of initial diagnosis, treatment, and hospitalization. Like the recent publication of the 2005 ACLS guidelines, the authors recognize that the best care for stroke patients is through a multidisciplinary team incorporating emergency medicine. One key aspect recognized in these guidelines is that treating stroke and administering thrombolytic therapy in the absence of a dedicated stroke pathway and infrastructure is not in the best interest of the patient. The emergency physician is not expected to treat with thrombolytics, particularly in the absence of a commitment from the institution to provide the necessary post-treatment resources. Highlights from the recent guidelines relevant to the emergency medicine community will be reviewed and discussed. Pre-hospital management and field treatment. The EMS community is a well-recognized important element in the stroke chain of survival. Remarkably, still just over half of all stroke patients utilize 911 and EMS. Patients who arrive within the current 3-hour therapeutic window are far more likely to arrive by EMS. A separate guideline statement targeting the EMS community is scheduled to be released in the fall of 2007 and will be discussed separately, so only the key points are discussed here. The stroke chain of survival begins with recognition of signs and symptoms and activation of 911. After ambulance arrival on scene, EMS providers should obtain a focused history and patient assessment, provide necessary stabilization and treatment, and transport immediately to the closest, most appropriate hospital. The word appropriate is key because it means that an ambulance may bypass a hospital that does not have the resources or institutional commitment to treat patients with stroke if a more appropriate hospital is available within a reasonable transport interval. Advanced notice to the receiving emergency department of the impending arrival of a potential stroke patient, along with information on comorbid conditions and estimated time of symptom onset, will speed the ED assessment. The issue of triage to the most appropriate facility is emphasized to a greater degree than before. Ideally, the local emergency medicine community was involved in the stroke center certification process, and the necessary resources have been committed to the emergency department to accommodate potentially greater numbers of stroke patients. Designation of stroke centers. A position paper by Albers, published in 2000, described the process of developing primary stroke centers in greater detail. These guidelines highlight the importance of stroke centers and their role within a system of stroke care. The new guidelines recommend that stroke centers be certified by an external body, such as the Joint Commission. Again, involvement of the emergency medicine community in the center development process will ensure resource and staffing issues are addressed. For patients with suspected stroke, EMS should bypass hospitals that do not have resources to treat stroke and go to the closest facility capable of treating acute stroke. Emergency evaluation and diagnosis of acute ischemic stroke. All patients with suspected stroke should be triaged with the same priority as patients with acute myocardial infarction or serious trauma, regardless of the severity of deficits. Pre-hospital notification of the arrival of a patient with a potential stroke expedites evaluation and diagnosis, and therefore hospitals should request notification from local EMS providers. Early implementation of stroke pathways and stroke team notification should occur in parallel with the ED evaluation and management. Hospitals must make the commitment to provide the stroke expertise on a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week basis and not expect the emergency physician to manage the stroke patient in a vacuum. Immediate evaluation remains unchanged. The initial evaluation of a potential stroke patient is similar to that of other critically ill patients, focusing on the stabilization of the ABCs. These guidelines also stress again the importance of using a standardized neurologic examination. The use of a stroke rating scale, preferably the National Institutes of Health Stroke Scale, or NIHSS, is recommended. The use of a neurologic examination and stroke scale helps develop a common language for use in communicating with stroke team professionals. Diagnostic and laboratory imaging. This section has largely remained unchanged. What is new is the recommendation that most patients with stroke do not need a chest x-ray as part of their initial evaluation. Brain imaging. Imaging of the brain is recommended before initiating any specific therapy to treat acute ischemic stroke. In most instances, CT will provide the information to make decisions about emergency management. CT imaging remains the imaging modality of choice. It's the fastest, most readily available modality in most emergency departments. The brain imaging study should be interpreted by a physician with expertise in reading CT or MRI studies of the brain. This recommendation has been added since the previous guideline. Hospitals must make the commitment to provide timely imaging performance and equally important image interpretation. General supportive care. Most of the recommendations about general acute management are based on limited data. Pending trials, many of the suggestions that follow are based on a consensus and thus receive a grade C recommendation. Airway support and ventilatory assistance are recommended for treatment of patients with acute stroke who have decreased consciousness or bulbar dysfunction. This recommendation has not changed. Similarly, hypoxic patients with stroke should receive supplemental oxygen. It is also generally agreed that sources of fever should be treated and antipyretic medication should be administered to lower temperature in febrile patients with stroke. Blood pressure management remains largely unchanged. While several ongoing trials may provide insight to optimal blood pressure management in stroke, little new additional data became available since the last guideline. Many patients have spontaneous declines in blood pressure during the first 24 hours after onset of stroke. Until more definitive data are available, it is generally agreed that a cautious approach to the treatment of arterial hypertension should be recommended. New to the guidelines is the addition of nicardipine. It is not clear if the use of nicardipine is considered aggressive when it comes to lowering blood pressure to an acceptable level for thrombolytic use. Nicardipine is a calcium channel blocker and, while not a new drug, seems to have obtained a new lease on life in the setting of neurologic emergencies. Patients who have elevated blood pressure and are otherwise eligible for thrombolytics may have their blood pressure lowered so that their systolic blood pressure is less than 185 millimeters of mercury and their diastolic blood pressure is less than 110 millimeters of mercury before lytic therapy is started. If medications are given to lower blood pressure, the clinician should be sure that the blood pressure is stabilized at the lower level before treating with thrombolytics. Equally important is that the blood pressure needs to be maintained below 180 over 105 millimeters of mercury for at least the first 24 hours after administration of thrombolytics. This point is critical. Patients will be exposed to potential harm if their blood pressure is not continuously monitored. This degree of supervision is difficult in a busy emergency department, and patients should be admitted promptly to offload the busy ED staff. Until other data become available, consensus exists that previously described blood pressure recommendations should be followed in patients undergoing other acute interventions to recannulize occluded vessels, including intraarterial thrombolysis. This is a new recommendation since the previous guideline. It is also generally agreed that patients with markedly elevated blood pressure may have their blood pressure lowered. A reasonable goal would be to lower blood pressure by 15% during the first 24 hours after onset of stroke. The level of blood pressure that would mandate such treatment is not known, but consensus exists that medication should be withheld unless the systolic blood pressure is greater than 220 millimeters of mercury or the mean pressure is greater than 120 millimeters of mercury. Since most ischemic stroke patients with elevations in blood pressure spontaneously decline, unless end organ damage is observed, few stroke patients will require emergent blood pressure intervention in the emergency department. This recommendation has changed from the previous statements in that a potential goal for lowering blood pressure is now included. Hypovolemia should be corrected with normal saline, and cardiac arrhythmias that may be reducing cardiac output should be corrected. This is a new addition to the guidelines. The guidelines now recommend more strict glucose control. Evidence indicates that persistent hyperglycemia greater than 140 milligrams per deciliter during the first 24 hours after stroke is associated with poor outcomes, and thus it is generally agreed that hyperglycemia should be treated in patients with acute stroke. The minimum threshold described in previous statements likely was too high, and lower serum glucose concentrations in the range of 140 to 185 milligrams per deciliter should trigger administration of insulin. What is not discussed in the guidelines is when to initiate hyperglycemic treatment and by whom. While the decision to treat hyperglycemia may be made by the stroke team, it is likely that many existing stroke protocols will be modified to reflect these new guidelines, and insulin therapy will be initiated in the emergency department. Recannulization strategies. Intravenous thrombolytic therapy, Per the authors, intravenous thrombolytic therapy for acute stroke is now generally accepted. Some groups reported rates of intracranial hemorrhage and favorable outcomes that are similar to those found in the NINS trial, but others have not. It is now clear that the risk of hemorrhage is proportional to the degree to which the NINS protocol is not followed. This again highlights the need for a system of care to be developed if thrombolytic therapy is to be safely and effectively used. Besides bleeding complication, emergency physicians should be aware of the potential side effect of angioedema that may cause partial airway obstruction. This recommendation has been added since the previous guidelines. Interestingly, most patients who develop angioedema do so on the affected side. Most patients who have developed this relatively rare complication have not required intubation. A new aspect of thrombolytic eligibility is seizures at the onset of symptoms. A patient with a seizure at the time of onset of stroke may be eligible for treatment as long as the physician is convinced that the residual impairments are secondary to stroke and not a postictal phenomenon. This recommendation differs from the previous statements and represents a broadening of eligibility for treatment with thrombolytics. Again, the decision to treat a patient who has had a seizure at the onset of their neurologic symptoms should be made in concert with the stroke experts at the center. Advanced imaging may definitively identify vessel occlusion in these patients. Since many hospitals no longer use nor stock tPA except for the infrequent stroke patient, other agents have been mistakenly given to stroke patients. The intravenous administration of ancrod, tenecteplase, retoplase, desmotoplase, urokinase, or other thrombolytic agents outside the setting of a clinical trial is not recommended. This is a new guideline recommendation. Intraarterial therapies. Despite more phase 2 data generated during the interval from the previous guidelines, no definitive phase 3 efficacy trial has unequivocally shown intraarterial treatment to be superior to IV tPA. Several ongoing trials, including the large 900-patient IMS-3 study, will hopefully answer this question. In the meantime, intraarterial thrombolysis is an option for treatment of selected patients who have major stroke less than 6 hours duration due to occlusion of the MCA and who are not otherwise candidates for intravenous tPA. Intraarterial thrombolysis is reasonable in patients who have contraindications to the use of intravenous thrombolysis, such as recent surgery. This recommendation was not included in the previous guideline. It is important for the emergency medicine physician to be aware of this possibility and how to contact the appropriate interventionalist for intraarterial therapies. The availability of intraarterial thrombolysis should generally not preclude the intravenous administration of tPA in otherwise eligible patients. This recommendation has not changed from previous guidelines. Since the previous guideline, the Mercy retrieval device has been approved by the FDA for the removal of intracranial thrombus. Although the Mercy device is a reasonable intervention for extraction of intraarterial thrombi in carefully selected patients, the panel also recognizes that the utility of the device in improving outcomes after stroke is unclear. This recommendation has been added since the previous guideline. Not surprisingly, CMS was lobbied successfully to change reimbursement for catheter embolectomy, and the financial reward has certainly not discouraged many centers from becoming referral centers for interventional stroke management. Anticoagulation and antiplatelet therapy. Urgent anticoagulation with the goal of preventing early recurrent stroke, halting neurologic worsening, or improving outcomes after acute stroke is not recommended. Thus, the emergency physician should not be routinely using heparin in patients with acute stroke. The oral administration of aspirin, initial dose 325 mg, within the first 24 to 48 hours after stroke onset is recommended for treatment of most patients. While it is important to administer aspirin when appropriate, it should not be given before a swallowing assessment has been performed. There is no evidence to support clopidogrel alone or in combination with aspirin for the treatment of acute stroke. This is also a new guideline. The guidelines also note that the use of combination therapies, thrombolytics, glycoprotein 2B3A blockers, transcranial ultrasound, and neuroprotective agents have not been sufficiently studied to recommend their use outside the setting of a clinical trial. Admission and general acute treatment recommendations remain unchanged. The use of comprehensive specialized stroke care, also called stroke units, incorporating rehabilitation is recommended. This recommendation is unchanged. The use of standardized stroke care order sets is recommended beginning in the emergency department to improve general management. This is a new guideline. What is not clear is whether patients who present to non-stroke centers should be transferred to centers with stroke units. Assessment of swallowing before starting eating or drinking is recommended. This is a new recommendation. The recommendation is particularly relevant to the emergency medicine community since a third of all stroke patients develop an aspiration pneumonia. Stroke patients in the emergency department should not be given anything by mouth until a swallowing screen can be performed. This includes the oral aspirin. Key summary points. These guidelines are very similar to the previous acute ischemic stroke guidelines. The importance of EMS triage to stroke centers and admission to stroke units are the important new modifications to the previous guidelines. Stricter physiologic management is encouraged, including temperature and glucose control. Intravenous tPA remains a Class 1 recommendation, and multidisciplinary systems need to be developed to safely and effectively administer thrombolysis. This concludes the session on the guidelines for the early management of adults with ischemic stroke.